Hello again, this is Deb Placey, and we are really happy to be back with the NHL Executive Suite. This is our first podcast of 2020, and we are really excited to have Jen Bellano, or J-Lo, as a lot of the Penguins call her, with this. She's been with the Pittsburgh Penguins since 2006, and it's like what you always hear about. She worked her way up the ladder from intern to director of communications to now a VP of media relations, which, you know, now you're considered an executive. So thanks for being our first guest of the new year.
Happy to be here, Deb. Worked a long time together, so it's nice that you're doing the interview.
Well, it's funny. I've asked you for so many interviews. It's funny. This is the first time I've ever interviewed you.
I'm not surprised by that.
But I have known you forever, so we're going to let our podcast listeners get to know you a little bit. And then, of course, we're going to talk about a lot of players and coaches and GMs that you have worked really closely with that they will know about, that you've had such an inside look at and view of on a day-to-day, morning-to-morning, night-to-night basis. And we'll have you tell some good stories, and I'm excited to ask you a bunch of things about them and about you. But let's start about, so you're a Penn State Nittany Lion, right?
I am a proud Penn State Nittany Lion.
Okay. And then you get a job offer from Disney and you're giving VIP tours and then you get to the NHL. So were you in Orlando or California?
Yeah, I was in Orlando. And when I was doing the VIP tours and media relations, I was one of the only people that had hockey as a preference. And so I had some former NHL players on tour. And when they came down to Disney, I was responsible for doing their media hits during like ESPN The Weekend. And, you know, showing them around the property and making sure they had a great family time on a vacation. But I really started to embrace doing the interviews and how that worked. And I started to look into what maybe I could do down the road. And lo and behold, these jobs exist. It's funny, now there's thousands of kids going to school for it. But when I went to school, you know, there were PR jobs, but no one specifically said that there were sports PR jobs that were like in this nature.
Now you can major in analytics. You can major in sports. You know, my daughter went to the David Falk College at Syracuse and majored in sport management. I mean, now it's a whole career that right when you were in college, you didn't even know was out there.
No, it's incredible. And I tell students sometimes when I speak to them that I'm doing them a disservice by telling them my career path because it's so unrealistic these days.
Interesting.
You know, like there wasn't a website that just shot you emails about different sports teams, internships, and things like that. So everything that I did, I kind of fell into, and I mean, I'm so grateful, but I was a lot of the story of right place, right time.
All right, well, you've taken advantage of it, so let's go to that. And I didn't feel like I had to do so much homework for this podcast because I feel like I've known you for so long and we have worked together. But a lot of what I saw and what I've heard people, you know, describe of you over the years that I would agree with is that this notion of you being one of the guys. And something I saw that said, I think you had said, hey, it's like I have 23 brothers. And the first thing I thought of was, were you comfortable being one of the guys from the beginning, or how do you think that worked?
Yeah, you know, I was. Sports was always important to me growing up. I went to a high school that was very sports oriented. I went to Penn State where athletics was very, you know, important, and I think it was something that I always enjoyed. And the other fun fact about this job for me is I get to work for my hometown team, which is very rare. And I grew up watching the Penguins, so I grew up a fan, and to even think that I could work for them one day wasn't in my vision at all. And then once I started doing some work with some NHL players, I thought, boy, it'd be really cool if I can get in with the Penguins.
So for anyone who doesn't know what that day-to-day job, which became really your life for so many years before you became an executive, for anyone who doesn't know what that job is like, the go-between between the media and newspapers, and that's another thing we can talk about, because it just used to be, right, the TV station that was carrying the opponent and your hometown team in like two newspapers, and now it's websites and .coms, and media is so different. But let's talk about at the beginning what it was like. How did you become this go-between between player interviews, the coaches, you know, being available, your general managers, and you've only worked for a couple because they've had such long stays in Pittsburgh? Tell us about the go-between for anyone who doesn't really know about what the job actually is.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because in my role, my number one priority is to service the media, but the closest possible way to being second is to protect and, you know, promote the organization. And so I serve as the person that's kind of like the gatekeeper to our players and management and coaches, but I'm also someone out there that's trying to get, you know, information out there, get a buzz, things like that. So sometimes it can be a little bit tricky, but for people that don't know, you know, you're the in-between person, because it's a lot easier for someone else to be the bad guy. You know, I'm someone that knows everyone's schedule. I know what else, what other things that the coach has. I know what other things the players have that day. And, you know, I know what's in some people's best interest, because sometimes, you know, the media asks for one thing and then they ask different questions and it goes a different way.
Right.
So, you know, it's someone that can coordinate all this stuff for the team. And, you know, I do that all on the hockey operations side. But even during the games, you know, for you, I'm sure you had a bunch of relationships with many players. And when they come off at intermission, it would be no problem for you to say, like, hey, Sid, do you mind if I get you for two questions? But the reason there's someone in between there is because if something's wrong and he needs to go to the training room or he needs to get equipment, he's not going to tell you that, but he can tell me that and I can get you an alternative guest. You know, that's just an easy example of why there's a middleman in the in that position.
Well, so you said it, and I was going to ask you, but so you were comfortable from an early age being the bad guy. Now, I have to admit, I couldn't... Now I probably could be the bad guy, but especially starting out, boy, 17 years late, you know, I don't know if I could have been the bad guy. Now, how were you able to be the bad guy?
So let me tell you a funny story. One day I had just started, I was probably maybe a month in, and the director didn't come in that day. And so I had to go in the locker room, and Ray Shearer was the general manager. And he basically told me, you know, okay, kid, sink or swim, you know, and Ray's great.
Right.
I went in, and I'm going around the room, and I mean, literally, hi, Mark, I'm Jen, you know, so-and-so's not here today. Would you mind if you could answer a few questions with local TV stations during this campaign? This is me to Marc-Andre Fleury, first time. I've never met him. I'm doing this to everybody, Sidney Crosby, everybody. And so I think, whew, I made it through the day. We got everything done. I think it went okay. And the director texted me and said, Sid told me to tell you stop being so polite to the guys. And it was the truth. I mean, I had like a 2-minute dissertation before I even got to my point. Now I'm like, hey, we got to do this. Let's go. You know, like, where are we going? Don't worry. You have to tape this. What is it? I'll tell you when we get there. You know, things like that. It's just such a change now. I just realized really quick that if I wasn't going to have the confidence and I wasn't going to be strong, it wasn't going to work.
And it's such a fine line between, like you said, your job is to serve the media. And as we all know, it's really not the media. The media is the pool that's the, you know.
Oh, yeah, the
fans.
Landscape is completely different now.
Right. But
that includes our own in-house requests these days.
Right. But it's such a fine line between you wanting to get the buzz out and getting publicity for your team and eventually selling tickets. You know, people, the Penguins are popular. We want to sell tickets. We need to market the team, and protecting your players. How fat is that line? How thin is that line?
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a, you know, how much can they handle? And at the beginning of the year, I sit down there. I'm fortunate that hockey operations allows me to sit down with our team services. And we actually plan out the calendar together, because it's easy to look at it from a, you know, instead of filling in days on like, oh, these are two practice days, me thinking like, oh, the night before Montreal's in, it's going to be a three-way broadcast. You know, it allows me to have more of a thought process even months in advance of how things are going to work, team events. You know, we get a list of all the requests from all the departments. You know, whether it's something external in the community, whether it's something internal for our foundation. We actually plot all that out on a calendar. I do that with Jason Seidling, who worked in PR with me forever. So it's really great that he and I can communicate, and he totally gets it. And that's been a huge help. But we do all this, and we do it knowing all the other requests that are going to come in last minute. And I think that's something that the job has taught me, you know, right away, that I can get us in over our heads very quickly if I don't maintain some sort of, you know, structure of what is enough. And it's a difficult task, especially when you have players of our caliber.
Well, speaking of structure, let's go to Sid. And was he there before you got there?
I was an intern since rookie year.
Okay, so you, about the same time.
Yeah.
And you've still said to this day, people have no idea the amount of requests he gets. So take us back to when he's this, you know, coming off of the lockout and the lottery and him coming and this, you know, larger than life young 18-year-old who's as sweet as can be.
Yeah.
The how did you start handling all the requests?
Well, at first I didn't. At first the director did, you know, and I was just kind of watching it all and thinking to myself, wow, this kid's doing interviews every single day, you know, and every intermission, every visiting broadcast that's coming in wants to talk to him. And I'm seeing the scrums in his stall. And then, you know, a few years go by and then I started, well, a couple years went by, I guess. And then I started to be more involved in his day to day. And, you know, I remember saying to him, like, when I really took over as the director and said, you know, I don't want to change anything for you. I want it to be the same. Like, just tell me what you want. He's like, I don't want anything. I just want you to treat me like everyone else.
Wow.
And I remember those words, like, then I was like, okay, cool. But now I'm like, that is so true, and that is so him. You know, he wants it to be the same. He doesn't want it to be about him. He's always a team guy, and I say it all the time, and it's the truth. I mean, he's the interview I can walk away from 99.9% of the time because I know he's going to say the right thing, you know. There's not a lot of gray area. He's pretty black and white, but he's so good at what he does on and off the ice. I mean, learning from him, I use him as an example to other players. So he is a true leader, and I've been so fortunate to work with him.
It's funny. I was thinking about this as you were saying it, that he wanted to be treated like everyone else. And from my perspective, I always saw that as he would have been embarrassed in front of his teammates and never wanted his teammates to think that he wanted to be treated differently. Like, it's a lot about his relationship with his teammates is why he wants to go that route.
Correct. Yeah. He's someone that, you know, what's good for them is good for him. And, you know, he could easily be difficult. He could easily want special things. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, Deb, but, you know, I take special care of him. But I do that just because I know he needs it. You know, even when he doesn't, he may not realize it. Sometimes I have to think, oh, well, maybe we should go in a back door here.
What's the craziest request you've ever gotten for him?
Oh, gosh. We get some pretty crazy requests. You know, it's one of the things that always is so interesting to me is when we've obviously been fortunate to be in the Stanley Cup final together. You know, I've been with him for 4 of them, actually, but 3 where I've actually been more involved with his stuff. And the international media, like when the Chinese media come in, they are just enthralled, you know, and it reminds you that I'm with him every day, right? You know, and it's not that I take it for granted, but when they see him, like their faces light up.
Wow.
And they're so excited to interview him. And I have no idea sometimes, you know, like it's really hard to understand them, but he is always so excited to do those ones because it's so cool, like so cool that people that far away are such big fans and know who he is, and it's crazy. I think that's probably the craziest stuff.
So we had Bill Guerin was one of our guests, right? I guess it was shortly after he got the Wild job. And it's funny, you know, when you've been doing this a long time because the players you covered or were with are now GMs, right, and coaches.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's happening to you. So
oh, yeah.
We got him right before the season started, and sort of at the end of the podcast, I said, tell me something about Sid that I wouldn't know or that we wouldn't know. And he said, you know, the lasting image I have of him or the lasting thought of playing with him was that he got it and that he realized 30 seconds or a minute of his day or his time would make someone's day, make someone's year. And that he got that, like, from the very beginning.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You know, and Billy's someone who, you know, Billy taught me that. One day Billy told me that his father told him once, it's, you know, the quote that it's not how you treat people who can do something for you, it's how you treat people who can do nothing for you.
Yeah.
And Billy is salt of the earth, one of the nicest people I know, and he's right. Sid gets it. You know, it's never about like, oh, I want to make sure I'm seen doing the right thing. It's just he genuinely wants to do the right thing. You know, it's like when we're pulling away from somewhere and we stop the bus and grab the kid's jersey, you know, that's outside in the middle of all the adults, you know, and you don't know where those ones are going, right? They all got their binders and they want to sell them. And there's a little kid with a Crosby jersey on and he just wants an autograph. and like we've brought kids on the bus. You know, it's awesome. He takes the time and he gets it.
So you got this larger than life Sidney Crosby, and then along comes Evgeny Malkin. Tell us about the, and he didn't speak, so I guess where we start is, did he not speak any English when he first came over?
I think he spoke no and pizza. Yeah. He was pretty limited. I was very fortunate to have Sergei Gonchar around.
Okay, and he was like the translator.
Yeah, he would help me a lot, and the story goes that Gino says he actually learned the most English by watching television with Gonchar's kids.
You know what? I've heard even like the show Friends. A lot of guys have said that they've learned some English from TV and from Friends. So he probably got like Barney, whatever he was watching with Sergei's kids.
Whatever they were watching, you know, it's so funny, but it's true. And Gonch was always helpful. I'll never forget. I remember we were at Mellon Arena trying to explain to Gino that he was going to have to talk about the power play and chemistry. And he just kept saying the word chemistry, 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 you know, over and over again, like trying to say it right. And then Gonch starts saying something to him in Russian, and Gino starts saying something back to him. You know, they're very animated and loud when they're speaking Russian to each other. And I'm like, what's going on? And it stops, and Gonch goes, he's good. Okay. And he was. Like, he said his word chemistry, and he was really proud of that. And then when he won the MVP, we were walking down the red carpet in Vegas, and he knew he was nominated for it. And he said to me, if I win Hart.
Hart.
If I win Hart, maybe I give Gonch. I'm like, okay. And he pulls up his phone, and he says, tell me what this word means. And it said, dedicate. And I said, I like literally had tears in my eyes.
Oh.
And I said, yes. You want to dedicate it to Gonch. And he's like, yeah. So he went up for his first award, and I had written a little card for him, and he like stumbled through it, you know. And then he's like, if I win Hart, what'd I say? I'm like, just speak from your heart. And he's like, no, write it down. I'm like, no, just, it's better if you just try and do it. Like, your last one was, it was bad. Like, just go ahead. You know, you can go back to the award show and look at this now. So he goes up, but he can't remember the word dedicate. And so he gets up there and he says, I'm like to give this to my friend Sergei Gonchar. And like, I don't think people understood what he meant, that he was dedicating it.
Right.
But he literally did give that award to Gonch.
Well, could you imagine, though, and we do talk about this a lot, and I think that fans understand it, but going over to Russia and learning a new language and doing interviews in Russian, I mean, who can do that? I mean, you sort of have to turn it around to what it is for them to have to come over here and do.
Yeah, you know, when we won the first cup, there were a lot of funny memes of Gino, you know, I'm score and the champagne tastes big. And it's funny because everyone laughs, right? Evgeny's really smart. You know, he kind of felt bad because he knows that he can't convey what he wants to say in English the way he would convey it in Russian.
It's like somewhat frustrating probably for him.
Yeah, you know, and he's glad that it, you know, turns into like it makes people smile and stuff, but at the same time, you know, he gets that it's kind of like a laugh at his cost.
Well, I know from being around you and seeing you and hopefully, you know, folks that are listening to this podcast, you hear your infectious laugh, but you've gone to humor. I mean, when all else fails, go the humor route. I mean, how much has that helped you over the years in dealing with, you know, a lot of winning that the Penguins have done, but, you know, players getting traded, players getting cut, injuries, tough times, losses. I mean, how often do you have to go the humor route?
Oh, just about every day. When I interview staff, whether it be our game night staff or our interns, that we ask kind of silly questions. You know, if you're on American Idol tomorrow, what song would you sing? And, you know, what three songs are on your iPad? If I called your best friend, what would they say about you? And they're non-interview questions, so to speak.
Right.
But it's because we spend so much time here and work so much. You want to make sure you have people that can smile. And one of the biggest things that I take away is, like, I want, like, the people that I work with to be able to turn it on when they have to, but be able to just relax when we can. We have a really great group, and we laugh a lot. I would say we laugh probably every day, all day, because if we didn't, I don't know what we would do. There's a lot of things you just have to laugh off. You know, and one of the big things I always say is advice, you know, if you want to go into this business, is having thick skin. But I don't just say that. if I went home and let the little things bother me every night, I could think about things every night. You know, sometimes people aren't happy with you, but the next day you're going to wake up and there's going to be someone else that's not happy. So it's just the way it is.
So others have said that about you, and I know that from having seen you in action, but not as well as, you know, someone who's been with the Penguins and been with you on that side of it, that you really are able to let things roll off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me, I have a conflict with someone, and 17 years later, I'm still worried about it. How?
Oh,
is
don't
it?
Worry. There's still some people that I have the grudge. I just don't. I'm not worried about it.
What's tough about a reporter that gives you, you know, give us a couple examples of, like, does it, when, if it gets testy, what about winning versus losing? Does it get sometimes testy? You know, how do you handle that? Do, you know, reporters, you know, still get, you know, get testy? There's a lot of pressure on everybody.
They get testy, and, you know, a lot of times right now, and you can understand this, and this is the part where I think they don't think I understand, but of course I understand. The landscape has changed. No one wants that same, you know, 5 minutes of quotes. Everyone's looking for their own soundbite, that one statement that no one else has, just so it adds something to their story, you know, exclusively told me, and or just told this out, you know, the XYZ outlet. But the fact of the matter is I'm not trying to impede anyone from doing that. I'm trying to be respectful of the player's time. And I think sometimes I've been in situations where, you know, Montreal, for example, it's a tough city. There's a lot of media. You go to Montreal, you bring Sidney Crosby. It's a ton of media. Everybody's trying to get their own 2 seconds. And I remember recently, like as recent as last year, you know, someone came up after a scrum was over. He's getting ready to get up. And hey, can I ask you a few questions? I was like, oh, I'm sorry. He's just finished. And he's like, so I can't ask him anything. And I said, well, he just finished talking. He's been talking for 6 minutes. No, you missed his scrum. And he looks at Sid and he says, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions?
Yeah, then.
And Sid looks at me. And I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sid. Just get out of here. You know, and after, like Sid and I talked about it, that's really uncomfortable for both of us.
Right.
You know, like, because he knows that I'm just trying to do what's right. Finally, I said to the guy, there's 3 other writers that came up to me before you and asked if they can get 1 or 2 with him. What do you expect him to say? And just going back to the beginning of our of this podcast, that's why I have a job.
Right.
Because he's not going to say, oh, I'd like to get out of here. But I knew that his parents were on the other side of the wall and he wanted to visit with his family.
Right.
And so he did his job. He did what was required. And everyone has a reason, right, why they need their own soundbite. And it's difficult. Yeah, some still get testy, you know, and you know how it is. After some losses, people don't want to talk, and I have to go in, and they get mad at me, you know, but I try and pull them out and bring them in, explain the reasons why it's important.
Right.
You know, it just, it is what it is. The ones that get mad, I think they just take it too personal, because it's not personal with me. It's typically just what's right and what's fair.
So let's talk about the wins and the losses, and as you say, taking it personally. How hard is it for you to separate when, you know, you're around these players and these coaches and the staff, how badly they want to win and you want to win? Is it hard for you if the team loses? How do you handle keeping your emotions out of winning versus losing when you get to the Stanley Cup final, you know, Eastern Conference finals? Or do you need to separate it, take the emotion out of it, or not?
I can take the emotion out of it now. I can honestly say that. But the one thing I will say is, it's tough when the reality of it's a business hits, you know, when there's a trade of someone that you really like, or, you know, a new coach, or, you know, something like that. That's when it's really that bitterness of, boy, you know, I'm much more invested in this team than I let on, you know. But once you get in the playoffs, I mean, it's a whole new ball game. Yeah, of course, you're running on adrenaline, you're lacking sleep. You want the end result to be the best it can be. And in 2008 was my first year as director when we lost to the Red Wings at home. You know, that night will like be ingrained in my head because I was still learning a lot. And I remember Ryan Malone, Pittsburgh product, knew that we weren't going to be able to afford to sign him. He sat in his gear in that locker room until after midnight, just because he knew that was it for him in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
I remember, you know, being the person that didn't open the door at the time, but I was standing in the room, and I remember one of them looking at me and saying, don't open that door, you know, and they're all sitting there crying.
Wow.
And I remember being like, oh, my God, this is awful, awful. And then the next year, I got to experience the complete opposite of it. It's a roller coaster. You can't, especially like during the season right now. I mean, the way Mike Sullivan and the staff has this team going with all these injuries, it's hard not to be excited for them. You know, it's one thing, one adversity after the other, and you start to think like, oh, how can they keep going? Or this is going to get tough, or these are going to be long days, and then they keep winning, and you know, you start to be excited, like you're a part of something that's cool that's happening, even though I have nothing to do with what's on the ice.
I'll have to say this was, as we're talking about the ends of these games. Now, in getting ready to do the podcast, someone did say that you were somewhat superstitious, and you're, you know, they're like, don't forget, you know, you're not allowed to ask Jen before the end of a game your request for the guest of who you want to have. And I said to my, because, you know, it's a superstition, and, you know, as soon as you ask and it's too early, then they get scored on and the game is tied and then they lose. And I said, you know, it's funny. I think I worked with Jen for 15 years and I never knew she didn't want you to do that. I asked her like every game I ever did for the player before the game was over. So I guess I didn't
happens.
Know.
It happens so often on those long cup runs where, you know, there'd be 2 minutes left and we'd have a shutout, you know, right? And they'd be like, oh, if this holds. And I'm like, no, you can't. And then sure enough, the shutout would go bye-bye. Right. Or, you know, it'd be a one-goal game, and it's like 2 minutes. Like, hey, you know, if this holds. And I'm like, no. And then we're in overtime. So I'm not as bad during the regular season, but I am pretty, like, especially when it's the NHL broadcasting's in and they want to coordinate for national TV. I'm like, nope, nothing until this is final. And, you know, we'll get to, like, the 30-second mark, and then I'm okay.
Right, right. Okay, so on that note, let's do Marc-Andre Fleury. I'm going to guess you didn't have too hard of a job when it came to him in terms of your role, but is that true? I mean, he's, you know, everybody loves him. He loves the camera. He's so outgoing.
Oh, that smile is contagious, and his heart is bigger than anyone I've ever met in my life. He's everything you think you know about him and more. I couldn't say better words about Fleury. With the expansion draft, I was sitting in the second row, two seats over from Sid, because it was the awards as well. You know, we knew that he was behind the curtain, that they were going to bring him out as their pick. And I had my phone up the video, and I have the video on my phone where, like, it just stops because I just started crying. And, of course, there's a camera right in Sid's face, and he literally was like, get it together. There's a camera in my face. Because we were all, you know, that was hard.
Yeah.
That was one of those days. It's a business.
What about Dan Bylsma when he got fired? Was that, well, first of all, Eddie Olczyk was Sid's first coach. So you would have been there when Eddie O got let go, right?
I wasn't. Okay. I was actually there. Michael Therrien's first week is when I started.
Okay. So were you close?
Whenever was here when Edzo was here.
Were you close with him, or was Dan Bylsma the first coach you were close with? And what was it like when he got let go?
Terry and I had a good relationship. I was just new to the mix, you know. Dan was someone who got it right. It was starting to be that change of like that 24/7. We were the first team to do that, and then we elected to start doing it ourselves immediately following because the players were used to it. The fans loved it, you know, and it was like that uncharted territory behind the scenes. So they really got to see, you know, a lot of our team, and it was great. And Dan really embraced that. Dan was a people person, and he was just so friendly to the staff and really good to me. You know, it's hard when you go from coach to coach, like, and I don't want to bring this up, but I'm going to, but especially as a female, you know, you don't know what they think or how they feel about that. And Dan was great about that. I mean, obviously I had a really good relationship with him, and you know, it's funny because coaches will tell you they know they have a shelf life, and you don't like to think about it, but it just, this is what it is. You know, I now have a great relationship with Mike Sullivan. I mean, my relationships are probably pretty different with both of them, but I wouldn't trade either one. And I always say that about Ray Shiro and Jim Rutherford. I love and respect them so much, and they are completely different. I mean, you know how Ray is. Every media request Ray got went through me. Everything that Jim gets goes right to his phone. You know, Jim's handing out his cell phone number the first week, and I'm like, what's going on? They're going to call you. You know, so I've experienced different spectrums on that, and I appreciate the way they all work in different capacities. But I've been so fortunate to just have great relationships with the two GMs and the coaches that I've been a part of.
So what's the difference between Dan Bylsma and now Mike Sullivan?
Oh, boy.
Where do you start?
Sully's a little more serious than Dan in the in the wind. So I'll tell you a funny story, and this will be my example for you. One night in November, I'm walking with Sullivan to his post-game press conference. We're going back and forth, all the things. He's, this guy did this, and I mean the power play and this, things he might get asked. And he's just complaining about all these things that went wrong in the game. And he looks at me, and he goes, "Anything else?" I'm like, "Yeah, we won." And he just started laughing. And I'm like, "I'm sorry, but, save this stuff for when things don't go right."
That's good. I had no idea that was next. Truth.
And I said to him, I'm like, "It's November. We won." Because he is. Every game is equally as important, whether it's October, January, April, or June. Every game is equally important. And not to say that wasn't the case for Dan, but it was just funny. He would enjoy wins a little more. Let's put it that way.
Sometimes just vent to you, and then by the time they get into the media room, they've gone through it in their mind, and they do.
Mike says that's his real press conference, because I say, they're going to ask you about this, or they ask the players about this, and I get his real answers. And he's like, why'd I got to go in? I just gave you the real press conference, and then he goes in, and we stick to the basics.
What about the differences between Ray and winning that first cup and then Jim Rutherford?
With Ray, it was uncharted territory for everyone, We just won the cup with Sidney Crosby, and Ray was young GM, and everyone was young. It was crazy. We didn't even know how to respond, right? Now you hate to say this, and I'm going to knock on wood. It's something that we know what to expect now. You didn't know that then. And with Jim, he's had so many experience, and having experience being the GM and the president of Carolina for so long, he has this bigger picture of the business side too, and how to make it work with he recognizes you got to make the corporate sponsors and you got to take care of the season ticket holders. We just do so much more now than we did then, just out of learning. And obviously the landscape of media has just really changed that with social media and behind the scenes stuff. So it's just completely different times.
Let's go there. How has your job changed now that social media is there? Whether it's your players tweeting, people tweeting about your players, people, everybody's a reporter. Anybody who has a phone and can tweet
Sully and I always talk about it's the silent majority versus the vocal minority, because that's the truth. Most of the opinions you see on social media are the negative ones. The people that are content and dandy, they don't go on there, preaching positivity. So sometimes you have to learn to take things with a grain of salt. I know with us, we have over 1 million followers. So when, I hate to say this, but when 50 people are upset, it's 50 people. You're not going to make everybody happy. That's the way it works with anything in this world. I think that social media has been a huge, huge advancement. I love it. It's such a great tool. But at the end of the day, it can be really a thorn in my side. When you're dealing with PR, it's that expectation of instantaneous communication. And, the peek behind the curtain is just more and more and more and more and more now. It's almost like it's never enough. We do our behind-the-scenes show, but now we put some stuff out on social before the episode airs because there's no point in holding it, People want to see things as they're happening. And it's been a lot of change. We have a YouTube channel now where you can go back and you can watch this stuff. And just seeing where it has gone from when I started, it's incredible, And now I have a lot of people that I work with. Our whole new media team is fantastic. Our social platforms, I think they do a great job. And I love it. The players, I will say, a lot of our veteran guys are just not there. They don't go, they're on, but they just read stuff. They don't really post much. Instagram's become more of a thing for all of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
I have to say they're pretty well behaved on social media.
So let me ask you this. Do you talk about, when you meet with the players, and obviously you're interacting day to day, but at the beginning of the year and then especially with rookies, you meet with them and go over some ground rules for the year. You get to, training camp. Do you encourage your players or set ground rules to not responding to negativity?
Yeah. So development camp, we have a social media symposium. We put some examples up, past and present. It's some of our athletes, some other athletes, examples, and, you know, we talk about them because we want to be honest. You know, we tell them, you know, this is your personal life on display. Like, we'll have a rookie who's 17, right, and his whole Twitter feed's about his girlfriend, and I'm like, hi, you're 17, and you're a professional athlete. You don't need this out there, you know. Your personal life can be your personal life. You have to leave some things to, you know, something private. It goes from that to, you know, how we talk to the media about injuries and how we talk about bad losses. And we win as a team, we lose as a team, stand up when you talk to the media, you know, all these different things. And I think that some of them really take it to heart. And I really do think that it's more relevant now than maybe it was even just 5 years ago.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They see how quickly things can happen with social media.
Well, like Kevin Durant of the Brooklyn Nets got into it with the broadcaster and the fans. And it's really a double-edged sword. I mean, you can see it both ways. You know, you can have respect for Kevin Durant for sticking up for himself and for, you know, being honest. Because what's that whole thing where we don't want to hear cliches, we don't want to hear the same old thing, we want to hear our athletes tell us what they really think, and then when they do, we're like, why did you say that? So that's kind of a fine line also.
That part of the training, it says, if you can't take the heat, stay out of the kitchen.
So if you're going to jump in, then you're good with the criticism. Otherwise, don't do it, kind of.
Yeah. If you're going to do it, then you're going to have to be okay with hitting that at symbol, you know, and seeing what the mentions are. You're going to have to be able to walk away and, you know, not go there. So it's tough. I remember a player made a mistake in the playoffs, and when he came back for the next season, so it would have been 4 months later, he told me he hadn't hit the at symbol on his Twitter account since that game.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have so many different types of personalities, and honestly, so much of it is positive, all the winning and some wonderful characters. Phil Kessel is someone that's been a bit of a lightning rod because he was traded a couple times, and I had to look of when Phil came to the Penguins, and it was July 1st. And he's someone that doesn't appear, at least, to love doing interviews. It's not necessarily his thing. He likes his skating to do the talking. What was it like working with him? Have there been other players through the years that have been like he was, and how do you handle that?
Phil is one of a kind.
So there's no one else like him that you've...
There's no one else. But I'm probably his number one fan.
Okay.
He knows this. I mean, I talked to the Arizona PR staff when he went there, and I was, you know, Jason and I were both working in PR at the time, and we were able to get through to him. You know, we were able to get that trust factor with him down, and, you know, it got to the point where he'd come out to talk to the media and say, I'm only doing this because Jen's making me, you know, and, like, it became this funny thing, but he was hysterical. I mean, in the room, he was hysterical.
Yeah.
No, the media didn't get to see that side of him, and he is very private, and he is very, you know, he's just kind of reserved. I mean, listen, they're athletes, right? Like, not all of them are good at doing the media part, and, you know, his answers are short, and I used to stand behind the cameras in his scrum and, like, pop my head up because he always looks down. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying to get you to look up. And he's like, oh, I'm like, what's she doing back there? You know, but, like, different things where I talk to him. And this goes back to something I said earlier. I said, hey, Phil, you know, welcome to Pittsburgh. You don't have to be that number one guy, but, hey, that number one guy sits here and talks to the media every single day. And I have expectations for all the players in this room, and it's no different with you. And, you know, I remember I really treaded lightly with him. You know, I didn't push him right off the bat. I didn't ask for a lot. And it was good. And I remember I asked him to do his first television interview during the game. And he was so mad at me. So mad at me. And I don't know what game it was. I want to say it was like game 37. And I never go in the room at intermission. You know, I'm in the hallway, whatever. But I go in the thing and I said, hey, it's game 37. That's the first time I asked you to do a TV interview. That's not how it works. And don't talk to me like that. And he was great. He and I, like, have a great relationship, you know. That was another tough one. This reminds you it's a business, you know?
Yeah, that's
but
great.
But I can't say, listen, Phil may not have been the media's favorite, but I can tell you the staff, we all got a real kick out of Phil. He was a good guy to us.
I bet. Okay, so I could talk to you all day, but I got to do a couple more things. You pregnant on the job. I can only imagine. I went through it twice. I once told a friend who Jenna Wolf, who's pretty well known. She was, we did sports together, and then she went on to the Today Show. And I was talking to her about being at MSG, and I said, yeah, you know, they put up with me for being pregnant on the air 18 months. And she was like, is that how long it takes? I'm like, no, that was for two. But
that was interesting.
But yeah, so what was it like for you?
It was crazy. I'm not going to lie. And I think I was on some sort of mission to prove, right? And you probably can attest to this, that I'm not going to be any different. I'm just going to keep doing what I do, and everything's going to be fine, and nothing's going to change because I can do it all. And I remember that I was due in the end of March. So
oh,
my
great
plan
timing.
Was to travel as much as I could until like January, because I knew Jason was going to have that in the playoffs. So that November, I'm not kidding, we traveled 3 out of the 4 weeks in November. And I remember I found out I was having a girl at like 8 in the morning, and then got on a plane at noon to fly to New York for an 8-day road trip. Ugh. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I went and bought pink shoes at Bloomingdale's for her. I bought her a little Stuart Weitzman. And then December hits, and I didn't feel well one day, but the team was going away the next day. And so I didn't say anything. I came to work, and they were like, hey, Jen, you need to go talk to Sid. His test for the mumps came back negative, but I don't know. We're going to do another swab because he has, his face is swollen. So I go into the locker room, me, the pregnant one.
What are you thinking?
About this now. And he's tying his skates, and he looks up, and I'm like, whoa, you can't skate today. He's like, my test was negative. I'm like, Sid, your face, like, they're going to see you. He's like, is it bad? I'm like, yeah, it's bad, you know. And then there's all the gifts, you know, you could still look that up, Sid's when he had the mumps. So the next day, the doctor calls me and says that he does have the mumps. They did a swab then. So then here I am now, 7 months pregnant, and now I have to go to the infectious disease doctor to see if I have the mumps because I have a fever and a sore throat.
Why did they let you? But you were, how far along were you?
7 months. Well, wouldn't have affected me.
Oh, okay.
Like, it wouldn't have affected the baby. That's what I was getting at. Actually, I ended up that I had pneumonia in both lungs.
Oy.
And so I was sick. But for the safety of, like, there were two other girls pregnant in the office. None of the pregnant girls were allowed to be around. But I was far enough along that the mumps would have only affected me, not the baby. The pneumonia was actually worse. And so every time a player got diagnosed with mumps, I couldn't come to work for 25 days. So I missed 5 weeks of work.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I remember calling the team doctor and being like, I talked to my doctor. It's okay. Like, I'm just sitting here getting bigger and bigger. I need to come to work. Because I was so, like, active. I was on the road. I was going to the gym. And now, like, oh, my gosh, I'm just sitting here. Because I felt like I was in quarantine. I didn't, like, do anything either. I had her on April 2nd. So it was right before the playoffs. And it was just, it was crazy. I had to watch the playoffs. It was a first-round loss. But I had to watch the playoffs from home. And that was total, like, twilight zone for me.
Well, if it would been before, they could have put you in labor. I mean,
true.
How were the guys true. Though? How did they treat you? How were they around you?
Oh, the guys were great. Gino used to talk to my belly. So when I had her, I remember we had a barbecue to start the next year, and I was holding her, and she's like 6 months old at the time. And Gino's like, hey, baby. And her eyes like moved over to look at him. And he's like, see, she knows Uncle Gino, you know, like, and we laughed. But, and Sid and her are like little buddies. She brought him a Halloween treat bag this year. So, and we're at practice. As soon as he comes off the ice, she's trying to hand it to him. I'm like, wait till he puts his stuff down. She's like, here. But they have an ongoing joke that she won't hug him.
Oh, she won't. Is she afraid of him?
She'll fist bump him. She loves him. She gets so excited when he's on TV. Yeah, it's crazy.
My thing was, but maybe because you were around younger players. When I was really pregnant, it was the summertime, so I was traveling with the Yankees, and it was like open season for all of them to tell me their birthing stories. They're like, "What happened to their wife?" Or like, "We're in an elevator," and they're like, "Their water broke," and I was like, "Okay, I'm getting on the third floor." A lot of, even some of the coaches, you know, asking me questions about what I'm going to do. And I'm like, okay, I can't be going there. But maybe because they were older. Did a lot of the players having kids now, or are they still more of a young group? Or a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of families around the Penguins.
Yeah, no, we have a lot of kids now. Brian Dumoulin has a baby. Nick Bukestad has a baby. Letang has two kids. Jack, I think he either has two and is having his third, or he has three and is having his fourth. I mean, we have a lot of kids now, so it's really fun. Patrick Hornquist has two beautiful little girls. It's interesting, though, because now, like, I went to the same doctor that they went to, so we all talk about that, and, you know, we talk about, I think it's easier for them to talk to me about, you know, their wife's delivery rather than, like, another player.
Right, right.
So we do chit-chat about that, but I remember the funniest part of my pregnancy was Jim Rutherford used to get so mad because I always wore high heels.
And he didn't think you should?
You gotta take it's time to put those away, Jen. You gotta be safe. You gotta be safe. And I tried to work right up until my due date, and then I got put on bed rest the week before, but I was at a weekend. We had back-to-back weekend games, and the team doctor came by at the one intermission. I had, like, 4-inch wedges on. My ankles were swollen. He's like, you need to go home right now. Like, okay. And then I went to the doctor the next day. He's like, you need to stay home until this baby comes. I'm like, okay.
Well, at least you felt good enough to work. Last thing before we get to our executive summary, which is the end. Mario, what's your relationship like with Mario? Is he around the team as much as he used to be? I know he has this really elegant way of really suddenly being there when the team really needs him, or saying just the right thing at just the right moment. How much is he around?
Mario has a way of being around without being around, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, the players may not know he's around, but he is. He'll pop in after games, say hi to the coaches, and, you know, he's like carries himself in this mysterious, classy way, right?
He just exudes
class. And he's so private, and I really respect that, because it's tough to be someone of that caliber of an athlete, right, and have the privacy that he has. And he's very friendly, very nice. You know, I wouldn't say that I chat him up all the time, but when I'm around him, it's been great. You know, I recently got to travel to Jim Rutherford's Hall of Fame with some people from the organization, and Mario's family was with us, and they're all so wonderful, and they're really just friendly, inviting people.
That's neat. Okay, are you ready for the executive summary?
Yep.
This is our new edition going forward for 2020.
I know what this is because I don't.
Yeah, so you get to be the... The first. So it's five quick questions. Just have a little fun now that we've gotten to know you to know a lot about what you do in the executive suite that you're in. This is just a little fun way to end. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Your favorite thing to do to get your mind off of work?
Play with my daughter.
Okay, that's good. What's the best thing you've binge watched lately?
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, I love that.
I may quit my job and do stand-up about my job.
Your go-to coffee order?
Grande Americano with skim milk.
Do you have to have it, like, to get out of bed or to make your day?
No.
You don't?
Just coffee gets me out of bed. That's my, like, when I'm ordering it somewhere.
Okay. Beer, wine, or straight liquor?
Wine.
Oh, good.
And rosé.
Okay, last thing. Something you can't do that you wish you could. We have you stumped. This is the first time in an hour you've been stumped.
I don't think I've ever been at a loss for words. I honestly can't think of anything. I used to love to ski, and I don't get to do that anymore because of my job.
That's good. Is it like in your contract so you don't have an accident?
No, it's not in my contract, but one Olympic, the last Olympic break, I went to Vail and did a good job on my knee.
Okay.
And was reminded that I don't ski that much anymore, so maybe I shouldn't go to Vail.
All right, well, I cannot tell you how much I have enjoyed having you on the podcast and the NHL Executive Suite.
It's been so fun.
It's been great.
I appreciate you having me.
So we are really glad that the Penguins Vice President of Media Relations, she's got a fancy title now, Jen Bolano, was our first guest of the new year. First of all, some of those stories about Evgeny Malkin and Sid and Phil Kessel. How can you not love those? There's like a lot of emotion behind the scenes and some no-nonsense there, but you can really tell why she's so good at her job and why she has been able to forge such great relationships with those players and the coaches and the GMs that she's worked with over the years. So we thank her for coming on, and now here's where we remind remind you that you can subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, because not only will you get all the future episodes of the NHL Executive Suite, you have easy access to some of the other ones we've already done, including both of the GMs that we were just talking to her about, Ray Shiro and Jim Rutherford. They're up there. And then for sure, rate and review. Please rate and review. We so appreciate the feedback that you give us, including, you know, let us know some ideas you might have of who you'd like to hear from. And until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.